It's a busy day on The Full Story, so no time for any more cheesy Pi Day jokes. But any way you slice it, our next 3.14 segments will be of interest to you. Welcome. We are glad you're part of The Full Story. I'm Ron Ropiak. And before I get to today's show, I want to thank everyone for all the emails about yesterday's show on recycling. We appreciate you taking the time to write to us at tfs@wshu.org. We encourage the emails all the time. But as I said, today we do have a busy program, so let's get right to it. Sacred Heart University came out with a poll the other day, taking a look at how some Connecticut residents think about some of the issues facing us. There were some very surprising results, and I'm sure state officials and policymakers took notice. Joining me in the studio is Professor Leslie DeNardis from Sacred Heart University, the Executive Director of the Institute for Public Policy, Associate Professor with the Department of Government, Politics, and Global Studies, and the professor runs the poll.
That is correct.
Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Ron.
Joining us on the phone, Seamus McNamee, Senior Director of Research with Great Blue Research. Great Blue partnered with Sacred Heart. Seamus, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
The results of the poll, many aspects of it took me by surprise. I was reading it with great interest, but I just want to get some quick background on it, Professor. How many people did you poll, and how long did you do this for?
Okay, well, thank you, Ron, and thank you for the opportunity to be here to talk about our poll. Just to give you a quick snapshot of how the poll came about a year and a half ago, we launched our first poll in October of 2017. And we decided to do polling on, at that point, it was the state budget crisis, but a host of other issues. And we felt it was really time to gauge residents' sentiment about Connecticut public policy. So the mission of our institute is a sole focus on policy issues facing Connecticut residents to gauge their sentiment to inform the public policy-making process.
Seamus, how many people were included in this poll?
There were 1,004 people included with this poll.
And was this done in person, on the phone? Did people email?
Yeah, it was a dual methodology. So we did just about 500 surveys via telephone methodology, and then another 500 or four. So we're able to respond via email.
Professor, what were some of the most surprising results of the poll to you?
Well, I thought the overwhelming support for things like regulations on e-cigarettes and e-vaping, as well as the overwhelming support for affordable housing. I also thought it was interesting the opposition to the tolls in Connecticut. Mm. We had done a poll about a year and a half ago in the context of the state budget crisis, and one of the questions that we asked residents were if they would support tolls as a method to resolving the state budget crisis. At that point, Seamus, you can correct me, I think we had about a 70% percent of the respondents supporting tolls, and now we've seen that sort of now decline to about 59%. And I think that the maybe the erosion of support has come because now it's not an abstract discussion anymore. It is a concrete discussion with more details emerging. And so we've seen a lessening of support over time.
Hmm. Seamus?
Yeah, I think that's fair. In this most recent poll, as more details have come out, we actually saw support down around 34, 35%. And we did have a majority of support when we asked the question a little differently in the context of the budget crisis about a year ago. So as folks get more details on it, we did see that support tend to drop off a little bit in just over a year's time.
So to put it in plain language, as we get closer to actually paying for something, we may have second thoughts about it. It's like when the bill comes at the end of a meal, everybody points to the other
person.
Absolutely,
yes.
Okay. E-cigarettes.
So e-cigarettes, people are overwhelmingly in support of placing more regulations on them and even taxing them. And I think that's another issue as more details emerge about the health implications. People are just becoming more aware that they're not as innocuous as first previously presented. And now, there's a greater awareness. And so the issue has become more highly salient. And I think we asked the question at the right moment in time. As legislators and the general public are becoming aware, they're saying that we absolutely should start to, not only raise the age, but perhaps, do things like taxation and things of that nature, study the public issue, devote some funds to studying the public health implications. So I think that it's an issue whose time has come.
And again, as more and more people see, especially those from the younger generation using e-cigarettes, maybe attitudes are changing.
I think that's absolutely right. I think they have been the group that has been sort of targeted by producers, and they are the the largest users of these products and devices. And so, you know, they need to sort of regulate them and to look after the public health and safety of our younger people. I think Connecticut residents would like to see more of that.
Seamus, one aspect of the poll that really jumped out at me, and this goes back to a program that we did, oh, about 2 months or so ago, about the graying of Connecticut. Statistics show the boomers are getting older. Kids are moving out of the state. And I believe, according to your poll, it says 38.7% of Connecticut residents that you polled are thinking of moving in the next 5 years. And almost 72% of them are thinking of moving out of Connecticut. Does the poll ask them why?
So, yeah, so they were able to provide comments for those folks who said that they were indicating moving in the next 5 years. And, you know, there was a variety of things that we saw in those open-ended comments from, you know, things that you may come to expect, you know, housing prices, the housing market in general, to, you know, kind of some more unique situations that may be particular for a certain family or certain group of respondents.
Professor, what do Connecticut residents think about the quality of life in our state?
Well, I think they find that they generally like the quality of life here. They view their
quality. It seems like some of them want to move out, though.
You know, it's a mixed bag. They would say that their quality of life is good, and I think objectively speaking, we would have to look around and say that that is in fact true, but it's all perception, too. Can you maintain your quality of life? Do you feel that that quality of life is difficult to maintain? Are those gains being eroded by different taxes and different measures? So it's a question of perception, and I think while we can say on the one hand they generally view their quality of life favorably, they find it hard to maintain that. And so that I think that factors in their decision making about, you know, voting with their feet and possibly informing you know, relocation decisions.
Professor, before I don't want to forget, because I know we have limited time with you today, but you had an unusual situation in putting this poll together. You relied in part on graduate students.
We did. I'll say that our poll itself, generally we the Institute of Public Policy conducts the poll in concert with Great Blue Research, who actually administers the poll. But for this particular poll, we incorporate and we involve graduate students in our public policy and law class in January. And they assisted with the selection of poll topics. I have them research what the most pressing issues are in Connecticut. And we have a session. Great Blue comes into the classroom, and it's a really collaborative learning experience. And it's very exciting for them to be involved in the creation of a poll on pressing policy issues that are happening in real time up in the legislature in Hartford. And the knowledge that the knowledge and information that we're generating can factor into this policy debate and discussion in real time, I think is truly exciting for them.
It does sound exciting. And you get a little bit of a different perspective from a different age group also.
That's right.
Which always helps out.
Yes.
Seamus, could you talk to us a little bit about the results in terms of sales tax for groceries and medicine?
Yeah, so when we asked about a series of issues kind of facing Connecticut, the one that we saw the largest amount of opposition to, almost 90% of folks, 89%, said that they either strongly oppose or somewhat oppose the implementation of a sales tax on groceries and medication, compared to just 8.7% who are supporting it at the time of our poll. So, you know, if you think of the kind of net margin, you know, it's over 80 percentage points of folks oppose the implementation of the sales tax compared to those who support it at this time.
And Professor, again, I'm sure that many of the legislators up in Hartford at the moment are taking a good hard look at your poll because they're debating a lot of these issues.
I would certainly hope so. And that's the whole inspiration for this poll, is to provide legislators with data, with hard data and numbers to support some of their views and to really tap into what the public is feeling and thinking about issues and to inform their decisions. You know, we are in a democracy, and so ideally, they should heed the wishes and the views of the electorate, the people that reside in this state.
We just had a story on the news. Bill was talking about it because a decision has been made by the Connecticut Supreme Court in terms of the lawsuit that Newtown and some of the people who live there would like to take against Remington because of the shooting. Gun safety is one of the largest issues facing Connecticut residents. What does your poll tell you about training and arming teachers in schools?
It tells us that Connecticut residents are not comfortable with that idea at all. They'd like to bolster security measures in schools. They'd like to bolster infrastructure, harden schools. We know schools are very soft targets, but they do not have an appetite for arming teachers. I think they would rather see other measures, mental health, training of teachers to become aware, to be able to detect problems before they become a problem, to harden schools as their infrastructure. But the arming of teachers is an idea that they're uncomfortable with that.
Seamus, we have about 30, 45 seconds left. What takes place next with the poll? Where do you go from here?
Yes, yeah, so I believe we have a couple more of these on the docket to work again with Leslie and her team at Sacred Heart to conduct more polls in the future. At this point, we're available for any questions that folks may have about, our methodology, how we did the poll, or any of the specific findings that we uncovered with this poll. But I think the overall mission and our overall goal is just to continue to conduct these polls and continue to add a greater information to kind of the overall public discourse and public debate about the direction of the state.
Seamus McNamee, Senior Director of Research with Great Blue Research, and Professor Leslie DeNardis from Sacred Heart University. Thank you for coming in. And Seamus, thank you for joining us on the phone today.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ron. It's great to be here.
We were talking about tolls in Connecticut as part of the first segment. Now we're going to get a little bit more specific about it, because we're going to talk about what they've done in the city of Stamford. Steve Cullenberg is with us, and also Bob Lyon. They're both from the Board of Representatives in Stamford. And in Stamford, what they did just a short time ago is they passed a resolution dealing with the tolls. Bob, Steve, welcome. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Bob, what does the resolution say?
I think it's Steve's resolution. I think I'll let him comment.
All right,
comment,
Steve, you could start.
So the resolution, in a nutshell, what it says is it lists the reasons why our city is opposed to tolls, and it urges our state delegation to vote against them when it comes time for a vote, possibly May or June.
Now, Steve, you're a Republican.
Yes.
Bob, you're a Democrat. Are you in a court on this?
I voted against the resolution.
Okay.
I voted in favor, obviously.
Bob, why did you vote against it?
I didn't think it was an appropriate time to be voting on a resolution when all of the elements have not really been fleshed out, where people can make an informed decision. The nature of the resolution, in my opinion, and for the many members, nine members, I guess, who voted against it, that we need to know more about it. We just elected a state delegation from Stamford. Returning Senator Carlo Leone is the head of the Transportation mm-hmm. Committee that's considering this. And the proposal was brought to the committee by Alex Bergstein, who is our new senator. So I think the people voted for these people, along with our state reps, Matt Blumenthal, Libby Florent, whatever, mm-hmm. Are all there. And they were very clear about what their positions were. And I think that we have to be, we should be continuing our dialogue with them on a one-on-one basis. But for the Board of Reps to take a position and say that all of Stamford is behind this resolution is, I think, not a statement of fact, and one that when we learn more, we'll be able to take a position on it.
Steve, when you go out and you talk with the citizens of Stamford, what are they telling you?
Well, for the most part, and we're talking about as the details of tolls emerge, people are, if they support, they're either against tolls or they support it if it meets a certain number of conditions. For instance, if the tolls are at the borders only, or if only trucks are tolled. And to Bob's point, he pointed out that we just sent a state delegation to Hartford that pretty much unanimously supports tolls. But during that election season, kind of the popular narrative was this was only going to be for trucks. And when I was, working on campaigns at that time, the thing that I kept on hearing was, oh, well, we're only going to do it at the borders. We're only going to do it for trucks. And now as it's becoming more apparent that it's becoming more apparent that it's going to be all drivers. They're going to put up tolls every 6 miles. Nobody's going to get away from these things. I think the public is starting to realize that this is going to be a serious thing that's going to put a serious dent in their pocketbooks. And so they've come out pretty strongly against it.
Bob, does Steve have a point? Because when Ned Lamont was candidate Lamont, he was pretty specific in saying, look, it's only going to be on the trucks only. And that was his position. Now that he's governor, he's changed his tune somewhat. Some people would say a big change. Does Steve have a point?
Well, I think the Governor Lamont, like any good politician, the more input you get, your positions may be altered. You know, Steve and I are sitting at opposite microphones. I'm at the red microphone and he's at the blue microphone, just for those who don't have us on television. But it's interesting in the way issues are framed. The poll question was, do you support tolls, you know, strongly or negatively? Had the question been, how do you feel about the Connecticut's roads and infrastructure? What measures would you support to improve that infrastructure? Perhaps we get a different result. So I think we have a long way to go on this issue. Mm. The resolution, my voting against it, for example, really doesn't say anything about whether I support tolls or not. It just says that I don't support a resolution supposedly speaking for an entire city at this point in the dialogue.
Just out of curiosity, would you like to share what you think about tolls?
Oh, sure. I want my income taxes to go up. I want the gas tax to go up. I want tolls to go up. Nobody wants to pay more. So to say, would you like to pay more out of your pocketbook for something? I don't think anybody would be for that. But on the other hand, I've been in Connecticut a long time. I remember when the Mianus River Bridge collapsed. Mm-hmm. I also remember that Connecticut used to have tolls, and because we took a handout from the federal government to get federal bonds, we were forced to take tolls off of our roads. So we're not implementing tolls; we are reinstating tolls if this measure goes forward.
And also that accident, obviously, in Stratford was a major factor in getting the tolls removed.
They happened pretty much around the same time.
It happened pretty much then. Steve, Stamford just seems to be at the epicenter nowadays of the fight against tolls, because the no tolls movement was founded by someone, I believe, from Stamford, right?
Yeah, no, Patrick Sasser is actually a very good friend of mine. We've worked together on several campaigns. He was our 2013 mayoral candidate, Mike Fidelli. He was his campaign manager. So Pat's been involved in the community for a long time. And I think Stamford is kind of at the epicenter of this, because Stamford kind of checks all the boxes, right? Well, not only are we a border town, but we also have a whole slew of different demographics within our city. We have very wealthy people who live in North Stamford and Chepin. We have solidly middle-class folks who live in the middle of town. And we have, folks with high density who might be lower income who live in higher density housing in the west side, the parts of the south end, the east side. And so when a big major policy discussion like tolls comes up, we really can have we can see how one issue it canvasses an entire sector of the population just by observing what Stamford's doing. We can't do that maybe if we go to a place in like the Litchfield Hills where it's just a handful of people and in a small town, or if a big city like Bridgeport, but we can kind of see all of that within the city of Stamford. So it's definitely, it's kind of an interesting microcosm.
Bob, what I found, there were many aspects of the Sacred Heart University poll that I found fascinating, the results of it, but one of it was the decrease in the support for tolls in the state. And as the professor pointed out, as it becomes more of a reality, people are saying, just like you said before, theoretically, yeah, I'll pay a little bit more. My taxes will go up and it's okay. But then as it gets closer and you're figuring out your budget, all of a sudden, no, I'm not that in favor of it.
Well, I think the professor is 100% correct. The more things become real to people and how they start to judge it, you know, and how it might affect them personally, support is going to change. If I read the poll correctly, it was 54% of the poll said yes and 46% said no. So this is by not in any way an overwhelming support against tolls. I think there is overwhelming support, and I am totally I appreciate rather what Steve and Pat Sasser have done to raise the issue. I think it's one that if we're not involved in how it gets done, when, you know, and under what circumstances, then we're not doing our job. But to have taken a position, I go back to really why we're here is should we have taken a position at this point in time? And I don't I don't think that we're there yet. You know, it may be that once the plan goes forward, I might not support it. But at this point, I don't think we know enough. You know, and 50 tolling points spread over the entire area from the New York border to the Rhode Island border on two east-west highways plus a north-south highway. Mm-hmm. That's not a lot of gangways per mile, and I don't know that that's going to be the final number either.
Opponents of tolls have pointed that out. They've said, what's to stop the 53 from growing to 80 to 100? And how do we know that? Because this has happened in the past where money was supposedly going into the transportation lockbox. And then magically that lockbox got opened up and it went elsewhere. And opponents say, look, be realistic about this. How can there be a guarantee?
Well, that's why Senator Bergstein has also introduced legislation for an infrastructure box so that these can't be raided. And I don't think that that population would stand for the raiding of this anymore. I think just as we heard earlier today about recycling and the problems that we have, it sounded like a great idea at the time. You know, maybe we have some issues with that now with China not buying our recycling. So, if I might reframe your question, what's to stop it from going from 50 to 83? What's to stop it from going from 50 to 45 to 40?
Mm-hmm. Steve, with this all in mind, as you speak with others in Stamford, would they be willing to accept tolls in any way? Or are they saying, look, figure out some other way to pay for all this?
So I think that the big thing here, and it's kind of to what Bob's point was, is, and yours as well, We don't know what it's going to look like. And from experience, we know that when that happens, the folks in Hartford go as far as they can until they start getting pushback. And we can't ignore that Stamford is that this debate is happening outside of this grand, outside other part of this grander debate, which is happening in Hartford. We're a part of this state. We're a part of this world. So when we speak out and we say, hey, tolls affect us negatively, the folks in Hartford are already paying attention to the point that one of the state reps has threatened our city to cut our funding, which is already decreasing. And the governor said that we took an easy vote, which is, I think it's funny because it's not the first time a millionaire from Greenwich has talked down to Stamford people. So it's kind of ironic. But I think the problem here is that essentially that it boils down to trust. Do we trust Hartford to pay for our roads? Do we trust Hartford to use that money wisely? And everything that they've been putting out for the last 3 or 4 weeks keeps telling me that the answer to that question is no. Mm. It's going to be the same old shenanigans. It's going to be the same old thing over and over again. And unless we start pushing back, they're never going to learn their lesson. So we need to speak up, and we need to speak up with a loud voice and say tolls are going to hurt us. Spend the money more wisely. And maybe we can start having a conversation. But until you guys get your house in order, that conversation can't happen.
So you simply don't trust the system right now?
Well, think of it this way. If somebody is, how do I put this? If somebody has a substance abuse problem, right, and they keep asking for money, we all know where that money is going to go. We need to address why the money keeps on going missing. We need to address why Hartford keeps on the money from the Special Transportation Fund keeps on disappearing. And Hartford's addicted to Stamford money. And before we give them more, we need to treat their addiction so that they spend the money wisely that we send them. And if we don't do that, the money's just we're going to wind up in the same place 10 years from now, and we're not going to see any improvements. So we need to have this conversation on how we spend our money, before we even start talking about sending them another stream of revenue, of which we've already sent them many. So
Hartford basically has to go into a 12-step program.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, we're getting into a situation where I think we're getting to the bottom of this, where there's a trust issue on the part of the petitioners against Hartford, and it's not really about tolls at all. I think your listeners probably know, and maybe some don't, that if you go from Maine to Florida, every eastern seaboard
have tolls.
Yep. And we once had them. 40% of the traffic that comes through our state, especially on I-95, pays tolls everywhere else. And they get when I go to New York City or if I go to Washington, D.C., I'm paying those states to help them manage their infrastructure. But the trucking industry and vacationers get free ride on our roads, and we have to pick up 100% of the tab. So I do believe that there's a need to come up with a plan that to improve our infrastructure. If tolls are part of that solution, that's fine. And the last thing I'll say about the resolution is that it's easy to say no to something like this, but nothing in the resolution gave any concrete ideas about how to fix the infrastructure.
I'd like to respond to that, if that's
sure,
okay. So this is the big thing that we keep on hearing, is that every other state has tolls, so why don't we? Well, we have to examine what the other states that have tolls, what their tolling programs look like. For instance, Massachusetts has 13 tolls one way on the Mass Pike, and it's only tolled on the Mass Pike. New York has, well, both ways, but one way, if you drive one down one area of the Mass Pike, you're going to get hit with 13 tolls. New York has tolls on the bridges into the cities, into the city. They have a toll in New Rochelle, and they have tolls along the New York Thruway.
And Yonkers.
Yonkers. You know? Oh, yeah, that's right, they do. Mm-hmm. They have one at Peekskill, too. But I was, I actually went up to Montreal this over the Christmas break, and I didn't hit a single toll after I got over to Peekskill Bridge. So New York isn't as expensive. New Jersey has a couple, as you go down to Trenton, it kind of fades out. Rhode Island only has one. New Hampshire has them at the borders. Maine has a bunch of them until you get to Augusta. So all these are different than the proposal is in Connecticut, which according to the transportation commissioner is one toll every 6 miles on every major road in the state. So again, it's conditional, right? The acceptance of tolls is conditional. I'm sure people will be fine with having tolls on certain sections of 95. I'm sure they'd be fine with having them on parts of 91. But if we're talking about every 6 miles a toll, and let's break that down. They say it's going to be 4 cents a mile. My brother works in Milford. He's driving to work every day. It's probably going to cost him, their estimates are from Greenwich to New Haven's about $1.88. So let's shave that off. Let's just say for argument's sake, it's $1.50. That's $3 a day times five.
$720 a year.
Yeah. And he's not making a lot of money.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, because I can't do math. But but for folks who are making, you know, people who are making $35,000, $40,000 a year, that's going to add up.
Sure.
And people keep on saying, oh, well, you may spend more when you're in traffic. Well, there's a difference between what could happen in a traffic situation and what's definitely happening when you pass under a toll. Mm. So we can point our fingers at other states all day long. We can say that we need to be the same as them. But when it comes down to it, their projects are a lot more measured, and it's not to the extent that we're doing.
I got to hold you there because I'm going to give Bob the last 10 seconds here.
Well, there are lots of proposals for people, lower-income people, for people who are commuters, for local businesses, commuter passes along the way. I think the dialogue should be about how infrastructure is improved and not a quick, easy statement of no tolls.
Bob Lyons, Steve Kohlenberg, Stamford Board of Representatives. Gentlemen, thank you. It was an interesting discussion. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Ron.
This is The Full Story on WSHU. One more segment coming up. Stay with us. This is The Full Story on WSHU, and thanks for being part of our show. Let's talk now about one part of that Sacred Heart University poll that we've been discussing today, and that is about e-cigarettes. I'm sure you've seen them around. You probably know someone who uses them. Dr. Suchitra Krishnasaran is part of the Center for Nicotine and Tobacco Use Research at Yale, and she joins us now to tell us exactly what e-cigarettes are and how they affect our society. Doctor, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Most people nowadays do know what e-cigarettes are, but just in case there are some who are listening who really are unfamiliar with it, what is an e-cigarette?
Sure. So an e-cigarette is an electronic cigarette. These devices were originally developed to offer smokers a cleaner form of nicotine to help with their cigarette addiction. Essentially, what they are devices that vaporize nicotine, which is contained in the e-liquid, which comes in these devices, and that is then inhaled by vapors.
Does it work, in your opinion? I mean, if people are trying to get off smoking cigarettes, do e-cigarettes help?
Sure, that's an excellent question. There is a lot of research, ongoing research on this topic area. The evidence that exists today, there is both supportive evidence and not evidence that's not so supportive. And the reason is there's not enough science in the on this particular area. There are a lot of smokers who have used e-cigarettes to quit smoking. And these are more observational studies where smokers tell us that they've worked. But well-done randomized controlled trials, which are considered to be the best way of proving the efficacy of this, have not. There aren't too many of those. So we are still waiting for a lot of this evidence.
Just anecdotally, I see a lot of young people using e-cigarettes nowadays. Mm-hmm. Does that concern you?
Yes, it does, and I think that's one of the biggest concerns about e-cigarettes today. The rates of use of e-cigarettes amongst young people has gone up tremendously over the past few years. The latest data that came out from a lot of federal surveys that looked at this question showed almost a close to 45% to 50% increase in the rates of use since 2011-2012. The e-cigarette market has grown enormously, and youth are very attracted to these devices, which come in a number of different kinds of flavors. At the latest count, there are almost 15,000 flavors available in these devices, which makes them extremely attractive to youth. And youth also use these devices for a lot of unusual kind of behaviors like smoke tricks and dripping, which also can increase the risk of these devices. So there's a lot of concern that this increased use amongst youth could lead to nicotine addiction and could pose a lot of other unknown risks to young kids and young adults who are using these devices.
I'm sorry, you just used two terms that I'm unfamiliar with. What are they?
Are you referring to smoke tricks?
Yes.
Smoke tricks is also called cloud chasing. This basically involves producing huge vape clouds from these devices. And there are a lot of competitions now that you can participate in where people create different types and sizes of vape clouds. And you can win prizes if you create very innovative shaped vape clouds. So that's smoke tricks and cloud chasing. Dripping involves taking the e-liquid and dripping it directly onto a heated coil and then inhaling the vapor. The reason this is concerning is because, as you can imagine, the devices are created to function at a certain temperature and power level. However, by manipulating these devices and opening them up and opening up the coil and adding the liquid directly onto the heated coil, the user may be exposed to risks that are unknown, because we know very little about the risks of these devices as is, but we know even less about these other alternative behaviors that youth are participating in.
The smoke tricks, it sounds familiar, because I'm thinking back to my dad when he smoked a pipe when I was a kid. It's smoke rings, in effect?
Yes, okay. Smoke rings. They create things like dragons, and you know, it's there's all kinds of funky shapes that can be created using the vape cloud.
We have about a minute left. What would you like to see happen with e-cigarettes?
I would like to see e-cigarettes regulated in such a way that they are available to smokers if they are indeed helping them quit smoking. I'm certainly not against the idea of providing smokers with a cleaner form of nicotine to help with their cigarette addiction. However, they need to be regulated in such a way that they are not available to youth, and they are not so appealing to youth, because if we have so many youth starting to use these products, and the literature that exists suggests that many kids start with these products and then move on to using other combustible products like cigarettes, then that's very concerning, because we are just replacing a generation of cigarette addicts with another.
Dr. Suchitra Krishnasaran from the Center for Nicotine and Tobacco Use Research at Yale University. Doctor, we thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Smoke tricks and dripping. Learn something new on this show every single day, that's for sure. You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropianka. Let's continue the conversation now about e-cigarettes. We're going to bring in Dr. William Spencer. Dr. William Spencer is a Long Island legislator, and he is particularly interested in this subject. Doctor, thank you. We're grateful that you're spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here.
You heard the doctor talking about the flavors of e-cigarettes, and that leads us right into the conversation with you, because that's what you're focusing on, right?
That's correct. I had proposed legislation in Suffolk County to eliminate the flavors, but to allow access to flavors such as mint or menthol. And the reason for that is that the manufacturers are attracting teens on social media with influencers that will discuss their joy and experience with the flavors. My feeling is that flavors such as gummy worms, cotton candy, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, those flavors are designed specifically to attract children. And my legislation, I had proposed to eliminate the flavors, leave the mint, menthol, the regular tobacco flavors, and I think this would be a major step forward in terms of decreasing the attraction for children.
Dr. Spencer, can you clarify this for us? How old do you have to be to buy an e-cigarette?
Well, e-cigarettes are treated in Suffolk County as the same as tobacco in our county code. So you have to be 21 to purchase. So part of the issue is that kids are getting access from either older children that are close to the age or from establishments that may be selling to them illegally.
I don't know about you, but I see so many kids nowadays. I mean, teens. I mean, kids in high school who are smoking e-cigarettes. And I can't, you know, I hear 21, and I'm sorry for laughing, but I mean, it just doesn't work.
Certainly. I understand that. But there is some science behind it, and that is when, as the other doctor was mentioning, the brain develops actually through age 25. And what we've discovered is that if someone hasn't smoked by the age of 18, then they're three times less likely to smoke.
I'm sorry. I think maybe you were misconstruing what I was saying. I was saying that the age limit that I've seen doesn't seem to work, because I see so many kids walking around smoking, inhaling e-cigarettes.
Absolutely. It does seem that we need to tighten up on this issue globally through looking at online sales, convenience stores, vape shops. There seems to be a bit of an epidemic, which is one of the reasons I was looking at the flavors. I think there used to be a bit of a deterrent when you took a smoke of something that was menthol flavored when you were 14. You coughed and you felt nauseated, and maybe you backed away from it. But when you can try a flavor such as mango, it's very easy to become addicted after just a single use.
When the doctor was with us a little bit earlier, Dr. Krishnasaran, she described it as a cleaner form of nicotine. And I don't know if you heard the conversation I had with her about, you know, does it help? Can people actually use it to stop smoking cigarettes? What do you think about that?
I think that someone that has smoked combustible cigarettes for a number of years, that this did offer a hope that you could transition away from those. But as far as what she also mentioned, that there's no evidence to prove that it's safer. Sometimes the number of toxins, so in combustible cigarettes, there's over 600 toxins. In e-cigarettes, they say there's approximately 60 chemicals. But less chemicals doesn't mean safer. It depends on how toxic the chemicals are. And so just because we don't have knowledge, it doesn't mean that it is safer. And there are some studies that indicate that it may not be safer. And using electronic cigarettes as a smoking cessation device is not recommended by any of the major medical associations.
Do you get upset when you see those commercials on TV from some of the e-cigarette manufacturers who are basically saying, you know, we're going to help you stop smoking cigarettes?
Yes, I do. I think that after 50 years of combating smoking and seeing the numbers decrease year after year, the companies are very resourceful. They've repackaged nicotine into some 21st century device, and they make it sound really hip and cool. And now we're seeing the numbers starting to skyrocket again. So I do believe that they are making a new generation of replacement smokers. And we need to take steps now to not repeat some of the issues we face with combustible cigarettes.
We're talking with Dr. William Spencer, a Suffolk County legislator, about e-cigarettes and his proposed legislation that would basically stop the vape shops from selling fruit-flavored or even the. It's not just fruit-flavored, is it, Doctor? Because you mentioned some of the others.
Yes, it's not just the fruit flavors. It's also the way the e-cigarettes are delivered. We think of these large devices that make these large vapor clouds, but now with Juul, they get higher concentrations of nicotine. They look like flash drives, and kids are able to actually become addicted sometimes after a single session. And one Juul cartridge, there's as much nicotine as a pack of cigarettes. So this is very difficult for teachers to stop because there's a minimal cloud that's involved. Kids can actually smoke in class and sometimes not be detected.
It's my question to you, and it's interesting that you brought it up just now. How can parents tell if their kids are using an e-cigarette? Are there any signs besides actually finding it in their room or in their bag?
Well, I think education is important. The fact that a lot of parents may see a Juul cartridge that looks like a flash drive and may be completely unaware. I've started working with the health department to have assemblies at schools, not only for young people, the students, but also for parents so that they can become more aware. And then I've revamped my legislation to look at other methods, having ID scanners in stores, knowing that if 14-year-olds are getting it from older kids, if you have a 20-year-old walk into a vape store with $1,000 in cash purchasing e-liquids, then I would feel that there's an intent to sell there. So restricting the bulk sales, nothing in and of itself will address the issue, but if we continue to make small steps, really having tight vendor registration requirements and cracking down on those few bad characters out there that are selling to young people, then we can start to address this issue.
So, Dr. Spencer, where does the legislation go from here, proposed legislation?
We have a committee process of initially it goes for a public hearing. After the public hearing, it's approved in committee, and once it's approved in committee, then it would go before the full legislature. But anytime there's an amendment to the bill, it has to start the process over again.
Do you think this is something that will be done in the near future?
I am working with my colleagues in the legislature. I'm working with our school districts, PTAs, Cancer Society, the American Academy of Pediatrics. So I have a large group of experts that are coming together. But I'm also working with the industry, I think, really putting pressure on the industry to be more responsible, because we're not trying to limit adults' choices. I would prefer that adults didn't smoke or vape. But this is about protecting children. And we're now seeing that as high as 80% of high schoolers are smoking or vaping. And of those, 30% of them will go on to use combustible cigarettes. So although it could be a smoking cessation device, that bridge is a two-way bridge. There are many kids that are moving on to smoking.
Once again, just so we can get a feel for this, anything happening in 2019, or is this a process that you think that, well, maybe by 2020 we'll have something in place? And I'm assuming from what you're saying that the industry would like these, they would like to be more responsible, because, as you said, who wants more regulations?
Certainly. Well, I hope it's 2018. Just yesterday we saw the FDA release a statement, Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, that they are releasing their policy on restricting e-cigarette sales, and they're looking to restrict some of the flavors, especially the fruity flavors. They're accepting public comment over the next 30 days. So this is moving faster than I ever imagined. But here in Suffolk County, I'm looking to do something by the summer, because I think this is a public health emergency. So in my opinion, waiting to 2020 would be too late.
Doctor, if someone would like more information on this, if they would like to find out about the proposed legislation, how can they do that?
They can visit our Suffolk County website, which is the Suffolk County Legislature. They can also call my legislative office, 631-854-4500, and we will be happy to share with them and take their comments and give them as much information as we can.
Once again, that phone number is 631-854-4500. Dr. William Spencer, legislator, Suffolk County, e-cigarettes. Doctor, thank you. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you for covering it. This is part of the educational process, and you're making a difference. I appreciate it.
We're happy to do it, and thank you for your time.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You too. That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.